This is what's happening now from around the fight world. Time for the Fight Network Radio Knockout News Recap.
And as we continue here on the Monday edition of Fight Network Radio, we can tell you that on Sunday in Charlotte, North Carolina, TNA's Genesis was marred by some, well, last-minute changes. Kip James went from curtain jerker to being in the main event after Kevin Nash came down with a staph infection in his elbow. He was taken to hospital. We hope to have an update on his status sooner than later. Also, the TNA Women's Knockout Championship match was canceled after both the champion Awesome Kong and Christy Hemme were injured. Kong allegedly has a back injury while Hemme is suffering from issues in her neck. If you have a chance to catch the replay, I would suggest doing so simply for the Kurt Angle versus Jeff Jarrett match, a tremendous all-out brawl. Also in the news, we can tell you that Mark Hominick is suffering from what we believe to be bronchitis. According to his trainer, Sean Tompkins, he is now off the Affliction January 24th event in Anaheim. He was supposed to take on LC Davis in a featherweight contest. Affliction is looking for a suitable replacement. And it was Carolee Balje who defeated WBO super middleweight champion Dennis Inkin, handing Inkin his first loss on Saturday night in Germany. Balje wins his first world championship. For all your combat sports news 24/7, log on to thefightnetwork.com.
Face it, we all hate Monday, so what better day to rant than this?
My peeps are going to be rioting in the streets.
Here is John Pollock on Fight Network Radio.
When it comes to fighting, I'm a genius, okay? And nobody's going to outwork me. And nobody's going to beat me. And I got involved in this sport because I'm passionate about it. And this is what I love to do. And I do it 365 days a year, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
On Sunday, CBC presented their look at the world of mixed martial arts, specifically the economic structure of the UFC, using the public battle between Dana White and Randy Couture from 2007 and 8 as a backdrop to illustrate the separation of company from fighter. The tone of this piece put UFC president Dana White in the role of monopoly leader, with little to zero sympathy to those that point fingers or question his method of operation. As we look at the status of the UFC in 2009, a company with a 90% market share in the U.S. and expanding its reach at a furious pace, the topics of fighter pay, fighter insurance, and a fighter's union are all topics that are not going away. No one with any deep-rooted knowledge of the UFC financials are crying for Rich Franklin when they see his on-paper earnings that he will make this Saturday. Because yes, the UFC does take care of their top talents. But for the Nate Moores and the Tom Egans of the world, they will be lucky to make enough this Saturday in dark fights to pay for their training camps.
So you're going to have a few greedy guys. Listen, money's always going to be an issue. It's always going to be an issue. You need more money. This guy behind the camera needs more money. Everybody needs and wants to make more money. It's human nature.
We've been harping on these issues for years, and despite those that want to critique Dana White and the UFC, some, if not all, of the responsibility needs to be placed on the fighters, who choose to think short-term towards their next fight and payday rather than their retirement plans. Randy Couture was the perfect example of someone that was broken down by the system, and the prospect of his last fight being a court one, dragged over time through recesses and appeals, caused Couture to accept the conditions and return to work for the UFC. If fighters want more pay, if they want a union, and adequate insurance for risking their health, then these men need to get on the same page and march in concert rather than conflict with one another. Because of the general nature of the sport, the varying degrees of compensation, and the individualistic nature of mixed martial arts, I don't expect such a thing to occur anytime soon. Dana White is doing everything in his power to do his job, which is not to be a martyr nor a humanitarian, but to put his company in the most financially lucrative and profitable situation he can obtain. Dana White has been credited with a number of landmark moments in mixed martial arts history, but spearheading a fighters union is not one on his priority list. Sadly, it doesn't seem to be a priority on the other side of the spectrum either.
This is a f***ing war. We don't look at this like, you know, this is just our business, what we do. It's f***ing war. And one of the sad parts about this war is a lot of these guys aren't going to be smart enough, like the Randy Couture's and some of these other guys that we're talking about, and there's going to be casualties. In any war, there's casualties, you know? Don't ever jump into this thing and thinking you're going to come after us and kick our ass, because it's never going to happen, ever.
It's the final countdown.
Definitely a full house in studio here on a Monday, as it is the final countdown on Fight Network Radio, Sirius 98, Hardcore Sports Radio. Maura Ranallo along with you. To my left, your broadcast right, I have Ariel Helwani, mixed martial arts, forget mixed martial arts, combat sports crusader, who is, doing some good stuff these days for the UFC primetime show that's going to be debuting Wednesday. And do we have the time again on Spike?
10 p.m.
10, because that was the one thing on the blog that even Dana didn't know. It was at 10, 10:30, of course.
I think it's airing at both. I actually PVR'd it yesterday, and it's at 10 and 10:30.
So they're repeating it? Okay, cool. And the voice you hear now, of course, is John Pollock joining us in studio for this, the final countdown. Okay, so your team BJ Penn, you said, for your little show. Production there that you're doing. Okay, now for this purpose, you'll be GSP, and I'll be Big John McCarthy, so I'm just going to sit here. So, tell me why you're going to beat him.
Oh, man, you're going to make me go against my boy.
And on radio, this goes great, because I could just say, tell me why you are going to beat him.
All right.
And we could just...
Okay, well, first off,
I'm just kidding. It's too early to get into that. Right, I was giving you guys a hard time.
I was about to give
him I know you were going to go BJ with your Hilo.
When we met George on our shows... I'm very complimentary to my opponent, and I just want to be the best.
He says there's going to be twists and turns, though, that are unfortunately not going to be the same George. Well, he's learned, and of course now with William Morris Agency, I'm sure they're Creative Artists. Yeah. They're teaching him a thing or two about how to present yourself a little more in public.
No, but then you would think he'd be more canned, right? You think he'd be more packaged? He's going the opposite route.
You think so?
He's figuring it out.
Okay, good.
He's not going the A-Rod route. You know, like the same answers all the time.
So. Have you seen the movie The Wrestler?
I have. It was an unbelievable movie. I saw it the first day it came out in New York. And the thing, as I told John, the thing I loved about it was the authenticity of it. Because it catered to someone like me, and it catered to, you know, my mom. My mom probably wouldn't watch it, but you know what I mean?
I know exactly.
Talking about bumps and these little terms that you wouldn't expect from a movie like that. I never thought I'd see the day when a movie about pro wrestling would receive such amazing accolades. You guys saw it, right?
Well, yeah, definitely. And having been in... those dressing rooms, like with an independent wrestling organization, it is uncanny how accurate it really was. And how about Necro Butcher?
He came out like I thought a star. Natural. Especially that one scene. I think that's one of the biggest telltale signs of that movie, is seeing non-wrestling fans and how they react to that scene. Because I was in a theater where certain people were just unbelievable, like looking at this spectacle, and others were even laughing at it, that this was just so over the top and almost couldn't believe what was going on. And I think that's for guys like us to go watch it, seeing the reactions of non-fans and just watching this for what it is.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. There were a couple of, I'm sure, Young Street bankers in front of the buddy and I who went and watched. And they were, to the point, though, it almost got a little ridiculous. They were laughing at everything. And I don't think they even were able to grasp what was going on here. And the one thing, and I know he's been getting rave reviews, and I think he has a potential. I don't know why. I wasn't totally sold on Ernest Miller's role and the Ayatollah.
People are showing him love?
Well, some, you know.
I heard he actually got another job.
Yeah, he's George Foreman. He's going to play George Foreman, which, again, I don't find, but, you know, if you were going to play, I just don't see someone like him as, you know, the character from Iran, which, by the way, the Iranian government's already gone crazy.
First of all, he doesn't even look close to Middle Eastern.
That's what I mean. I didn't get that piece of casting at all. Like, I know wrestling in the days, as we know, they used to take Italians and make them Native Americans. Like, Chief J. Strongbow with the headdress.
Sure, yeah.
He's an Italian. And, I mean, and that's what I remember, the greatest ever. And I bought this hook, line, and sinker. You remember Stampede Wrestling, both you guys, of course. Bruce Hart, just a crazy booker at the best of times. He took a Japanese star, gave him Mohawk, and called him Sunny Two Rivers.
Really?
And it worked. The guy was amazing. It was phenomenal. But he did the war dance and everything. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, here we have this incredible portrayal, a tour de force on all levels with Mickey Rourke, Marissa Tomei, and let's not forget even Evan Rachel Wood. That last scene between Mickey and his daughter, tremendous. But I think they could have done a better job with the Ayatollah.
But really, with Ayatollah was like 5 minutes of the movie.
I have to find something to bitch about, don't I? Come on.
I do remember the one scene as well that I was watching it with Wei Ting at the Fight Network, and we're watching it here in this theater, and it's that one scene right to set up the final scene, the big shot, and I just turned to him, and here we are in a movie theater, it's full, and it's like Ring of Honor all over the screen. That to me was just... Ring of Honor came out of this movie, like they got their website plugs in there, they got their brand at least across, and if the HDNet deal comes as a part of it, then this is a total home run, I thought, for Ring of Honor.
And they've already started something with Jerry Lynn, who looks exactly like Mickey Rourke's character in the movie, and good for them to try to, you know, this is what wrestling's all about, right, Ariel? You take real-life scenarios, it's a microcosm of our society, and I think if done well, this could do very well for Ring of Honor and Jerry Lynn
I'm wondering if there's a correlation between this whole HGNet thing happening and the pub that they got on the movie. Do you think that, you know, some suit at HGNet was like, oh, these guys are legit, they were in a movie, or was
I know happening? That HGNet's been interested in them for a long time,
versus,
but I mean
too,
to,
right?
to pull the trigger on it, yeah, as versus as well, and for this advertisement for Ring of Honor, I think definitely puts them over the top. They've now upgraded their production, so they're getting some money injected into them right now, because that's always been the biggest knock on Ring of Honor, is the actual look on television. It's very difficult for them,
and they've invested I guess in some camera work. I guess the next pay-per-view that debuts this Thursday, Rising Above or whatever
Rising
it's called,
Above.
It's the new production we're supposed to see. Now, always easy to do after the fact, but I remember one of my favorite movies, my favorite actors is Christian Bale, American Psycho, just a tremendous flick. Leonardo DiCaprio was originally supposed to play that role. I can't
I
see that.
Going with
well,
this.
You know where
yeah.
I'm going. So, Nicolas Cage was originally supposed to play Randy the Ram Robinson.
That would have been
I don't see
a
it.
Huge mistake.
Isn't it weird, though, how this thing's... I mean, and again, having, one of the lines that I was nominated for as one of the worst announcers of the year was my line, as which Boss Rudin liked, by the way, was when I said in a Kimbo Slice fight, he dropped faster than names at a Hollywood party. Well, speaking of dropping names, I actually have had the pleasure of meeting Mickey Rourke in Japan. He was at a Pride show 4 years ago, and he took Boss Rudin and I out for dinner. At the same restaurant, you know the scene in Kill Bill where all hell breaks loose
yes.
amongst all the ninjas in the bamboo place? Well, that place. And to see where he was then, and he was very, very candid about his life and the mistakes that he'd made. He had just lost his brother to cancer, but very... you know, when you have it, you have it. You're a movie star. And he had all the problems with his face, claiming still no plastic surgery or whatnot. But to see that gentleman then and just really... trying to grasp at straws, and he thanked David Unger, his agent, last night. He had just hooked up with this guy in Japan, and I was talking to him, and it even dawned on me in Boston, I'm like, what's this young guy seeing this guy? What's, you know, Mickey Rourke, yeah, he's a great, but this young guy's just coming up the ranks. Why are you hitching your wagon to Mickey Rourke? Well, wow.
Well, you could take this full circle here into something that we all know about you know, guys replacing another guy, and look what's happened since. A whole company went down with that same story. Seth Petruzzelli walks in,
there
and
you go.
If he wasn't in there, who knows if, you know, you'd
well, and that's a great point. Now, but okay, but and very well put. But do you think how much did the radio interview on that Orlando radio station the next day really screw things up?
I think that had everything to do
really?
With it. I think Showtime and CBS, that it was all of that, because going into that week, everyone who came on this show, everyone that we spoke to, that they were going to inject money into this, whether this was a ratings winner or not, and with all the bad taint associated with that, I think CBS just wanted their hands off this product.
Yeah, because, no, you're right, and even, you know, and everyone always says, well, Moore, you're the announcer, you know everything, you're right there and there. I can tell you, too, they, you know, we had the feeling that they were going to buy. They were going to purchase, and it was going to be the beginning of a new day, hopefully. And they, as we all know now, they covered the entire cost of the production. But you're right. It's funny how things end up. And yet, I don't know about the Seth Petruzzelli radio interview. Really,
I remember the text messages you sent me that day before the show.
Oh, dude, I was – well, share some of them. I just – you have the sixth sense. I even Sam Kaplan, who was with me on that trip helping us with research, he was like, Moro, all week you've said you got a bad feeling, you got a bad feeling. I said, dude, I just don't know what it is, but wow.
Well, I remember after the show, I was in the elevator with Kelly Call, who's
yeah.
the CBS
yes.
executive, and I'd seen him at the Newark show, Stockton show, and now this one. So, you know, I don't think he knew my name, but we had some rapport, and I asked him, you know, what did you think? Be honest with me. What did you think? Is Elite XC dead? And he's like, no, that was great, this and that. So unless he was totally BSing me, it didn't seem to bother him that much that Kimbo went down. Then you have the radio interview and all the stuff that happens, and the biggest thing was, in my opinion, was the way that Elite XC dealt with it. And then you have these guys in L.A. and New York.
But see, that more than the radio interview.
Yeah, yeah.
I get your point. I think it was the fact that...
You had stories that were contradicting
one another. And that's the problem.
And
people coming from a position of weakness who still maintained a level of hubris. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the people involved in Pro League. Here, a major television network is just saved your life. They want to invest. You need TV. They've done all they can. And yet you're still playing games here, or you're maybe they aren't giving them the straight goods. And
I think that goes a point you've always said, that there's so many cooks in the kitchen. Oh. And here, okay, you had a crisis here where Petrozelli could have just gotten his words wrong here. Rather than getting everyone on the phone, okay, listen, this is our battle plan here. You had everyone going off in their directions. Yep. I'm going to defend it this way. Me, I'm going to defend it some way. About a month later, the CSAC ceased their investigation into it. Nothing
Florida,
was going to happen.
Florida Commission. Florida, no, you're right. Yeah, no, exactly. And not and this is, again, the one point, and by the way, good job on the Pollux POV, that the CBS News thing that I was interviewed for that was, wow, became a
CBC.
Rather day. CBC, yeah, did I say CBS again? I always do that. CBC report.
You're next up for us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I want to take a moment now and actually pay tribute to a guy like Dana White. Here's a guy who, say what you will about his personality, the way he conducts business, the way he speaks, but everything, and you are getting a piece of that now with your work with this primetime show, the buck stops with Dana White. The buck stops with Vince McMahon. Pro Elite, the buck was ripped into pieces and spread all over
the
ceiling. Like, and we had Turi Altavilla, who was a member of the Inner Circle, on our show last week, who, again, said the same thing. And you know, we can't just sit here and rue what could have been and whatnot, but it is something that I think needs to be investigated further as to why something with so much potential. And Ariel, let's face it, buddy. Get your take there.
Well, let me just say this. I don't mean to cut you
off.
No, no,
no. I'll go on for the last 5 minutes if you don't.
When all the stuff went down with HBO and the UFC, right, and we all kind of criticized the UFC for not giving up production control and, you know, letting this opportunity slip away, I thought it was weird, too. I thought that they were making a mistake. And now that I'm kind of a little closer to the situation, I absolutely agree with them.
Yeah.
And now that you saw what happened with Elite XC, it even makes more sense. Dana White and everyone who works at the UFC, and you can criticize them from today till tomorrow, they live and breathe this thing. And they did build it up. They didn't make MMA,
no,
all that stuff, but they built this company up.
And it's something to be said with having their in-house broadcast crew. That was really the thing that, again, as an announcer, sure, I want to broadcast MMA fights. But coming from the UFC's point of view, why would they not want to have their people?
And then you look what happens when, you know, My Network TV gets a hold of something called the IFL. You remember that first
episode? They were dead on episode one.
They were dead. So you think this guy who lives and breathes this thing, who put everything on the line, and the Fertittas as well, are just going to hand it off to some, you know, a company in L.A. that has watched this thing for 2 months, you know, and they're doing fine without it.
That's the key point right there, is that all these people, they'll point to the fact that, well, if you want to be a legitimate sport, you have to get on a major network, and being on a major network means you're not going to have in-house announcers, and you're going to have to give up certain rights. But looking at the UFC right now, they're doing pretty damn good right now, coming off the Lesnar Couture number and the state the economy's in right now. Do they really need a big network?
No, they don't need a network TV. And yet, and this is the in working with Showtime and CBS, the one good thing about that is the fact that they did a very good job, and God bless them for doing this, by the way, of keeping the announcers away from the pro elite people. The pro elite always wanted us to stay in the same hotel, where, as my superiors at Showtime said, no, the talent will be in another hotel, to keep that independence, to keep that unbiasedness. And to be honest with you, I don't think Joe Rogan or even Mike Goldberg are particularly shills for the UFC.
No.
They are doing it the format that they do it in. And I just wish more, and I think it'll happen more. Joe Rogan does it anyway. My biggest beef has always been just acknowledge other organizations. Other fighters.
But
he's starting to do that. That's what I mean.
A great job.
That's the only criticism I've ever had of having in-houses.
And that's to say, when Randy Couture left the UFC, Sean Sherk, why is he not the champion anymore? Stuff like that. I think that kind of stuff, you can't just hide from. Just explain the story. And I don't understand where that fear is that people
It lends more credence. And just what happened on the last couple of events with what we just saw again, and this is not just the UFC, but MMA in general are all combat sports, although, again, I will give kudos to Showtime. The fact that when there's a serious injury or something goes down, please do not leave the airways without telling your viewers, giving them up.
Sean Salmon, that one was the worst with Rashad Evans.
Yoshida and Vanderlei Silva. And I mean, the one good thing, the Showtime stuff was, you know, we had people in the back. You have a reporter waiting back there. And here we have big John McCarthy, who has to go back to refereeing, but I've said it on the show, and I'll say it again now. The man knows the sport inside out, has respect with everyone, is a former referee or current referee. Bring him on the broadcast. Keep him in the back there. He'll be the guy to give you the updates on the status of these fighters. It would add so much more to the UFC presentation.
Let me ask you this, though, about the announcers. I'm kind of going off a tangent. I always wanted to know the answer to this question. Frank Shamrock, did he really offer up the fight? Because to me, it seems like, oh, yeah, I offered, but they didn't want to let me fight. I don't believe him. Did he really offer?
You want to hear? Here we go. It's what's done is done. Frank Shamrock offered to fight. The medical papers were being sent to Florida from San Jose. His assistant was taking care of it. He's been cleared to fight. In hindsight, what a great story that would have been. And now Frank Shamrock was going to take the fight. And,
nothing against him.
Kimbo didn't want it, and rightfully so for Kimbo. Why would Kimbo have taken that fight?
I'm going to share one text message he sent me on October the 4th. Dude, this is fucked. Ken Shamrock's an idiot.
So let me put you on the spot right now.
Yes, we're almost done here.
Was that a self-inflicted wound?
You know what? There's conspiracy theories abound. I wasn't there. I can't tell. But nevertheless, regardless of what happened, why are you rolling the day of the fight that in that way, in that style? You know what I'm saying? We've heard rumors he was pissed off about the money he was getting. He was blowing off steam. October 4th, the end of Elite XC. It's amazing.
MMA's November 9th, 1997.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Showtime, CBS, let's bring it back. And by the way, again, congratulations, Gus Johnson, new voice of Showtime Championship Boxing. Ranallo, Helwani, Pollock, say ya!